Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday Morning MV Pro Call. Today is Thursday, November 21st, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to MotoVitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by visiting MotoVitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. Sometimes, you know, on getting them uploaded, I get, depending on what's going on, I get a week or two behind. So we love it when you're on live. Just 2 days ago, I realized that I hadn't uploaded the last three. I can't even believe how fast the time gets away from you. And so those of you that are listening to the recording, you probably saw, you know, three come through right at the same time. But I do work on trying to get them up within a couple days. But sometimes when we have classes and we're teaching and stuff like that, it gets to be a little bit of challenge. My IT guy, one of these days, you know, I gotta really sit down and have a conversation with me, because I'm the IT guy. So, anyway, also, in case you were wondering, in case people showed up, there will be no call next Thursday. Thanksgiving falls on a Thursday this year. And which is the same day we tend to have our calls. And so, you know, since it's on a Thursday this year, we will not have a call. So after today, we will see you in 2 weeks. So with that, I'm going to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is by asking, is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that's worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with, any questions you may have.
I've heard bits and pieces about this, but I have not had a chance to do a deep dive on it. Is anybody familiar with the federal mandate that's been handed down to notify people about lead exposure because of pipes? There's, from what I understand, there's supposed to be a database where you can go and search by address. And I've had customers like in areas that have been developed a really, really long time, getting letters about the possibility of lead exposure. Is anybody familiar with that at all?
So here in New York, I've been spending a lot of time in Michigan, but on one of the Facebook groups that I'm on, a lot of homeowners have been saying that they've been getting letters from the town water municipalities asking about testing their water and trying to figure out what pipes they have leading to their house and in their house and so forth. So something's happening here. Now that you're saying this, I think I should look into it a little further.
Yes, and from what I understand, it's come down from the federal government, and I don't know if this is part of the infrastructure initiative that they did, but from what I understand, there's supposed to be a database where you can search by address on the potentials of lead exposure, and then all the municipalities, if there is a chance, are supposed to be sending letters out, and that's where we're seeing it. But I'd love to know where the database is.
You know, I remember hearing a lot of conversation right after, the action level for the lead passed, but I don't remember the details of that. Paul, are you familiar? Paul Friot, are you familiar? Have you heard anything about this at all?
Not specifically, Kelly, but I think just what you're thinking, that it has to do with the update to the lead-copper rule and different aspects of that.
Yeah. Scott, I don't know the answer, but I think it would be interesting to maybe talk about that and look into it for sure. So I like those challenges for research. So that's cool. Did I hear you volunteer to do that and to be a guest on the MV Pro call?
Well, that's the reason I was asking y'all.
Right. So now we'll see if we can get some details of that. So I like that. That's good. I'm making a note to address that. That's awesome. So I don't have an answer for you though yet, but we'll get it. speaking of answers, last week Paul Sanfransky did a chat GPT question right before the call, and I did post that in the description of the podcast last week. So if you want to see what question he asked, he basically asked ChatGPT to make a recommendation based on a couple water problems, water parameters of equipment. And it was really interesting. It popped out a pretty good recommendation. I mean, it was accurate and had the right equipment that you know, a regular salesperson would recommend. It was kind of interesting. So if you want to see that, then that was in the description. I forgot to mention that. Scott, we will definitely see if we can get more answers on that for you. So I will try and do a little research on that over the next 2 weeks and see if I can figure it out. Maybe we can talk about that at the beginning of the call in 2 weeks, if that sounds good.
All right. Thank you. I'll do the same.
Yep. Anybody else? So I was years and years ago, and I was traveling down with my then wife from northern Indiana to see my uncle, who at the time lived in southern Indiana. And there was a road between Indianapolis and Mitchell, Indiana, where he lived. There still is the road, although it's definitely a lot different now. But it's a 4-lane highway. Traffic speed limit was 55 back then. Now they've really sped it up, but it didn't matter because everybody did 70 down that 4-lane highway anyway. And I don't know if you know anything about southern Indiana, if you've ever been there, but it's very hilly, very curvy. It's actually beautiful country. Not quite as beautiful as, I don't know, say Utah, Rogan, which is also a beautiful state. But Indiana, you know, lots of hills. So anyway, I was driving down the road headed down south, and there was this dog in the road and up ahead. And it was just kind of running in and out of traffic, and it was slowing cars down, and they were kind of swerving around it. I'm like, I gotta help this dog. We gotta get this dog out of the road. So I pulled over, and you know, the dog was kind of on the shoulder and on the side of the road, and I pulled over, and went out to try and call the dog to me, and it would kind of walk. It had a collar. So it was clearly somebody's dog, but I mean, this was out, there was nobody around. Okay. This was, way out in the, you know, I mean, we were quite a ways away from people or, you know, houses. There weren't anybody really close. There wasn't anybody really close. And so anyway, I'd call the dog and the dog would come up close to me. And, you know, 2 or 3 feet away, and I went to reach out to pet it and to kind of grab it, and it darted away from me right into the road and in front of this car, and this car slammed its brakes and swerved and barely missed the dog by just a foot or two. And then the dog sort of wandered back over, and it was still hanging on the shoulder again. And so I tried one more time, just this time trying to get in, you know, to coax it to get closer to me so that I could grab it. And every time I got close, the dog would run away. It would dart away and sometimes go, you know, back towards traffic. And when the dog almost got hit a second time, it was really hard, but I had to get back in the car and drive away because clearly my efforts to help the dog, they weren't gonna work, you know. And in fact, it might have contributed. I mean, if that car had not been just quite as fast, the driver of that car, the one that slammed the brakes and missed the dog by a couple feet. I would have contributed to pushing that dog back into traffic. And so I had to, had to leave the dog to its own vices, you know, because I couldn't, you know, there's in my efforts to help, all my efforts to help did was you know, further the potential of harm. So how's that relate to the water treatment industry and what we do? You know, that night, I got to tell you, it really bothered me because I am a guy that I like to help people. I like to do things for people, you know, but there is that old question, you know, that how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb has to want to change first. And so I was thinking about that. I was thinking about it because I'm actually going to see my uncle who's now in California. I'm going to see him over Thanksgiving. And so it's kind of thinking about this story. It's always kind of stuck with me. But I was thinking, you know, how does this relate to what we do, the water treatment industry? And it made me realize, you know, made me kind of think about how we sometimes have those customers out there that, and if we genuinely are in this business because we want to help people. You know, we've talked about that this year on some of these calls. You know, if that's our motivation, right, that we genuinely want to help them, we want to serve them. How do we do that when there are those customers that simply don't want to be helped? You know, or they say they want to be helped, but in trying to help them, we actually do more damage. Maybe there's a circumstance where, you know, we try and put equipment in, you know, to see if it's going to work, or, you know, to a problem water, and in doing so, I mean, there's costs associated to us, you know, for putting that equipment in, and, you know, maybe the customer trusts us and put the, you know, made the investment or put the money in, and then it didn't work. You know, do we eat the cost of that? Maybe both parties got hurt in that situation. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever been out there, you know, to a house where you've just seen the water that is, it's so bad. Here in Michigan, around a lot of lakes, you still have some 2-inch wells sometimes, you know, and you'll have 7-8 parts per million of iron. Some of it, half of it will be oxidized. They have a little jet pump. They have 40 grains of hardness, and they, you know, no room to put any equipment in, and they want you to fix this thing, you know, to create this miraculous treatment. How do we get this water better? Sometimes it's best to just walk away. You know, sometimes in trying to fix that problem is going to create a multitude of other problems, and in the efforts to try and fix them, you know, I can tell you, had I seen that car hit that dog, if that had happened, if I had witnessed that, it would have been devastating. It would have been far worse. I mean, it already haunted me to know that I had almost caused that to happen in an effort to help. But, you know, we're talking water treatment, right? Not a life, but it does, water does have an impact on people's lives, you know? So to try and fix that stuff, to try and do it, sometimes the correct recommendation for a customer is nothing at all. It's to walk away. It's to say, I'm sorry, I can't help you. So I just want to kind of open this up for discussion. What are your thoughts on this? Is this too much of a depressing story for the week before Thanksgiving? As I'm saying it, I'm like, I'm sorry, guys. Right? So tell me your thoughts or a circumstance where you feel that in trying to help. I mean, have you guys ever experienced that where you're trying to help somebody and it backfires in every possible way, sometimes you dig in, and it just takes, you know, you look at it and go, man, I never should have gotten involved with that in the first place. I mean, have you guys had those circumstances? Was this too much of an out there topic?
Kelly, I have run into scenarios where when you say backfires, the The result is that the customer loses confidence in my abilities and my judgment.
Then
it depends. In some cases, it's ended up costing me money. In other cases, they just back away.
Yeah.
And
you know, Paul, did you look at that and, you know, how confident were you that you could help the customer when you entered into the agreement? And would you, is there anything you could do on those differently to avoid the end result that you had where the customer lost confidence?
Well, in my case, I learned to be much clearer up front about the expectations and what I was trying to do to help them, with the clearer understanding that I can't be responsible if this goes south. I'm trying to do what I can to save you the cost of a whole new system, for example. But if something goes wrong, because that's one case I can remember in particular, I ended up eating a fair amount of money because the customer thought it was my fault because it wasn't leaking when I got there.
Yeah.
Was it my equipment?
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. And I ended up having a very good relationship, but it's because I ate the cost, and he was out in left field with his perspective. So, I learned from that. Be much clearer up front. I mean, really crystal clear.
I think that's a huge, you know, with the dog, you can't talk to the dog, right? I mean, that's, and I don't even know if it directly relates or not, but I think that's the key. Is when you are entering into those situations where you're really trying to help somebody, I think you just have to be completely upfront with them on what the potential is. You know, and don't be so excited about this potential sale or, you know, potential opportunity that you lose sight of the fact that while this stuff is based in science, sometimes it's hard to figure it out. You know, and we are limited on what the technology can do. We're also limited on what the customer is willing to spend. I mean, you know, if I have a customer that tells me they want to make it to Florida, you know, I'm in Michigan. I want to go to Florida, and I want to get there in 5 hours, but I don't want to fly. I only want to drive, and I want to be there in 5 hours. You can make that happen. The science is the science. I can make it happen. I can get you from Michigan to Florida in 5 hours. I cannot do it if you're not willing to invest in the technology. That's just not, and sometimes if you say you want to be there in an hour, there's just nothing I can do. I'm sorry, I want to help you, but there is nothing you can do. I mean, if it's a technological issue, then, you know, nobody's going to be able to get them to Florida in an hour, you know, or to, you know, to handle the iron. Or in the scenario that I had with the 2-inch well, if you put an iron filter in on that 2-inch well, probably is not going to give them. I mean, the science is the science is the science. Okay, if I can't, the technology is limited to what we have available. And if I've got that much iron in the water and I got a 2-inch well, and a jet pump that's only giving me 4.5 gallons a minute, I'm not going to be able to put that technology in. I do not have a technology that will make their water clean. It's like trying to, you know, demand that they get me to Florida. And could I, is it possible to get them clean water? Yeah. If they put a new well in, a submersible with a, you know, 5-inch or a 6-inch well, even a 4-inch well, and you know, and with better water pressure, then can we treat that kind of problem water? Yes, as long as they understood what it was. But customers sometimes want things from us that are not technologically possible. And so in that situation, is it better to walk away? I think so, because and you do so with sadness. You don't want to, you know, you hate to abandon the customer, but there is only so much we can do, and we have to be able to communicate what those limitations are, you know, and explain it. I mean, some customers are just not going to understand. They're still going to, regardless. I mean, you do have those customers out there that regardless are going to throw a Google review on for you, you know, just because you you told them there's nothing you can do, but people understand. I mean, we've talked about that stuff before, but in any other circumstances like this where you felt like it was just better to turn around and walk away, you know, where you sincerely wanted to help the customer, but it's, you know, it's best to just walk away. Anybody else have anything like that?
You have to under promise and over deliver. And I've used the phrase, I would rather you not buy anything from me and you be unhappy with your water than you buy something from me and you be unhappy with me.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, we're not miracle workers. You know, we have to follow, we have to do what the science allows us to do, what the technology allows us to do. And yeah, I mean, it you're right. Absolutely. Anybody else?
Hey, Kelly.
Go ahead. Is that Brogan?
Yeah, this is Brogan from Utah. This is a very, very timely conversation. I don't know if any of you guys saw that post that I put on Water Treatment Pros with the stuff that I found in the back of the toilet tank. Anyway, this was a customer about 8 months ago. They had a bunch of sulfur or rotten egg smell coming through the hot and the cold water. And the company I work for, they've been in, you know, business 30 plus years, but I feel victim of the company being like, oh, this is what we always use for wells. Just throw this, this multimedia, tank in there to take care of it. And here I am 8 months later and they're still getting the sulfur smell coming through the hot water.
Yeah.
So if I, you know, and luckily I've been taking a bunch of courses through WQA and I've learned a lot in the last 8 months. And if I could do it over, I would have first tested for iron and sulfur reducing bacterias, and then actually educated the customer and recommended some different equipment, or different options, because now we're having to put a lot more time into it, and now what I'm still waiting on the test results to come back for the bacteria, but I'm afraid that we're going to have to end up ripping that equipment out and then either putting in some type of chemical injection system or even a different option. So
those are hard lessons to learn. I got to tell you, I feel for you on that because, you know, it's hard in those circumstances, you know, to go back to the customer and say, you know, I'm still kind of new at this and I really didn't know what I was doing the first time. I mean, you can never say that, you know, but it's, they're hard lessons to learn. I mean, the more experience, especially in your area, and you learn how those things work. I feel for you on that one. That one's hard. But it sounds like you're doing, you know, sometimes those are it's the cost of education, right? That's the cost of school. Those situations like what you're running into right there. I mean, and they hurt. Those costs hurt. But that is what they call R&D, right? Research and development. Those are R&D costs. And that's a hard one. Michelle, you were going to say something?
I was just going to interject from the part of a homeowner that I can see that that's a very, very slippery slope for someone who I called in to help me, and I have a limited budget, and maybe I don't have credit that I could, you know, pay over time, and wanting to have my water be better. I think the key part, and I think Scott kind of mentioned it, is you have to explain it to the customer, hopefully in a way that they will understand. Everybody's different, but that they will understand that you want to do it right, and to do it right, you need to put in this equipment, and it's going to cost this amount of money. Because they could have someone else, they could not stop with you and go to someone else, and someone else, oh yeah, I'll just put this in and it'll be fine. So the customer might ultimately get something, but it's not going to fix the problem or not give them the water that they should have. And so it's a catch-22. And, you know, I just feel bad for people in those situations and sometimes it could be a mistake, like the gentleman just before, or not, you know, thinking that this would help honestly and earnestly, thinking that what they put in will cure it, and then finding out a few months later that it's not. But, you know, sometimes also those customers turn out to be the best. I know it's a different situation in Utah where they say, okay, well, I have a really difficult water problem, and it, you know, the company's coming back and doing what they can to fix it. But yeah, it's difficult when you can't help the customer, and sometimes the customer's not going to be happy about that. And if it's a financial limitation, it's just the way it is. So I hear what you're saying, Kelly.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on this topic? I wasn't sure how this was going to go. I was just thinking, you know, just thinking that sometimes we really, really, really want to fix it, and sometimes we just can't. You know, we're limited. There are limitations to what we can sometimes do. So sometimes it's best. The best recommendation is to walk away. Guys, the last thing I want to end today with, next week is Thanksgiving, and I would like to take just a moment here from the bottom of my heart to thank you all for being here. Those of you that are listening, you know, I say this to everybody when I start the call, you know, thanks for those of you listening to this via recording. I appreciate that too. I understand. Would love having you on live. Just to be part of the conversation, but for those of you that are regular listeners, that download this thing, that you shoot me the emails when, you know, or text messages to let me know your thoughts on it. I love hearing and seeing that. Those of you that set this on your calendar and put it there, and Scott, remember the access code without having to go back and look at it. What a huge compliment that is. I'm truly appreciative and grateful to all of you. You are my reason for thanks in many ways. So thank you sincerely. Everybody, please have a really, really safe and happy holiday, and we will talk to you in 2 weeks, if not before. So thanks, everybody. Be safe.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.